Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. Right, we are going to just take a little look back to the last few games since Michael Beale has been appointed, because we generally haven't had the chance to do that as the foursome that are here this evening. But we're going to look ahead to the big one on Saturday. I can't believe how quickly that's come around as Sunderland play Newcastle. Not a fixture we thought we'd see. Imminently, but here it is. Joining myself, Stephen Goldsmith, is Gareth Barker.
G'day.
Evening. Everything
How's it
okay?
going?
Still not got the
Yeah.
match? No.
No, I'm not.
Okay. Right. Richard
I'm not. I'm not.
Easterbrook.
I'm not. I mean, I'm
That's
not.
fine. It's fine. It's, yeah, it's fine.
Is
You've
it fine? Is it?
stated your case. Yeah.
Am I allowed? I don't really care what anybody thinks. I can do what I want, can't I?
You certainly can. You absolutely can. Richard's here as well.
Hello. How are we?
Okay, you.
Yeah. Really good. Yeah. I'm in the excited phase now.
Oh, yeah.
I get like this. It's a 2 day window, and the next window is sadly bowel related dread. But up until that point, it's all great. Like, we're gonna win and everything's gonna be great. Then it turns to dread and it's terrible. But that's my problem, not yours.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I was going to say we'll get on to that in a second bit, but I
Yeah,
don't want you to
probably
go in
not.
more detail into that, to be fair.
No.
But we'll talk about Newcastle specifically, and it's kind of a preview show, but it's not. So Matt Keelan is here as well. We've just had a bit of a shuffle around in terms of who says what and who's the biggest gobshite of the episode.
All right.
Evening, Matt.
Hello. You all right?
Yes. That looks very cozy. What you're wearing, that wool
It
look.
is. It's better than putting the heating on, isn't it? So
Definitely, definitely.
we're very much in Gary Lineker putting his glasses on the head territory here, aren't we? Really, for like this podcast, because obviously we're all here. We're playing Newcastle, so it's like very like we mean business. Something's gonna happen.
First team. Oh,
Something's
better read a
happening.
prepared statement.
Yeah.
None of us wanted to miss out on the pre Newcastle one. It's been that long since we've done one, isn't it? Absolutely mad.
I
We've never, we've never, never, never been us since we've been doing the podcast, and we've been going
think
10 years. So that says a lot. Anyway, let's. I want to just quickly do like 10 minutes on where we've been in the last few games, because I don't really think we've had a chance to all chat together. I don't want to go back. I know it sounds like I'm going back really ridiculously far when I mentioned the Coventry game, but what I just wanted to make a comment that you know how the fans reacted to that game, and that was very much the fans just venting their frustration, I think, wasn't it, rather than being personal on Beale. I just want to say that, a bit like we said before that game, how it was the decision to get rid of a popular manager, and then I think people were annoyed about the derby tickets, the seating arrangement thing, and I felt like everything just coming together on that one game. And I was concerned after that game when he's apologising to the fans. I thought that was ridiculously early to start apologising when you've been in one game. And I know he got a lot of abuse and criticism for saying we played well in between the box, but I actually agreed with him. I
I
thought
thought you did better then.
we were all right. We just defended terribly for 3 goals, which we've seen us do before. But anyway, loads has gone on since then. I just want to make it clear, because I think a lot of outsiders are looking in and saying, accusing Southern fans of not being very fair or willing to give Beale a chance. I don't think that's the case at all. I think he was just happened to be there when everybody, it all come to a head at one point, didn't it? And everybody vented their anger. But anyway, good recovery since then, Matt.
Yeah, I thought I kind of agree. I thought the Coventry game was obviously a disaster, but we probably played better in that game than we did at Rotherham. And but like the 2 wins, the Hull one was a good win to take the points off them as well, because they're in good nick and in and around where, well, probably 10 teams are going wanting to be at the end of the season. But I thought the game on Monday was like really professional. He didn't really need to do a great deal. Once we had the 2 goals, it was a formality, I think. And I think Ryan Lowe said as much in his interview after the game. He said Sunderland didn't need to score again because we just managed the game really well, and we did. It was quite encouraging, because I think I looked at it initially and I thought, it wasn't. We didn't have a single shot in the second half, and I don't think anything of note happened in the second half of the game. But it almost seemed it was a deliberate drop off, I think, with obviously the big game on Saturday, on the horizon, and with that game as well. The Preston game was Monday, so we only had five. We didn't have a full week either after that before the Newcastle game. So I think it's been a decent start, really. I think 7 points from three, really, to be honest, because we've forgiven the Coventry game, maybe.
I think if that was deliberate, that drop off in the second half, and that was really good. Because I remember I was sitting back thinking, I hope this is deliberate.
I
We're not
think
just letting
to
them.
manage the
It's
game, really.
conserving energy just made sense. And he dealt with it. I thought your subs were really good as well. And I think Pembele come on and run around like a baby giraffe for a bit. And whether that's just down to a complete lack of match fitness or what, he just wasn't at the races at all. And I thought he identified that quite quickly, didn't he? And put an extra defender in there. And I think that was clearly just to protect him a little bit as well. So I thought
He's done that twice, hasn't he? He's brought defenders on late in the game, in recent weeks. So mate, that's a very stark change to previous, where we wouldn't ever do that, really. I remember when Lee Johnson used to bring on Bailey Wright in the last 5 minutes and go to a back three. We're kind of doing that again. But, yeah.
I actually thought Pembele had an impact at Rotherham, to be fair. I thought he did
Yeah,
okay.
he did. Yeah.
He just looked completely like rubbish on Monday, but
Yeah,
you
it
know,
was
yes,
bizarre. It was really
it
bizarre. Like I say, you could see at
did.
Rotherham when he came on, you thought actually he's quite athletic. He's getting up and down the line, which is what we need at the moment. Especially now, Patrick Roberts is not going to be fit for the next few weeks because of that kind of opens up for a fullback to get forward and get on the ball. But that was something else I thought worked well, Richard. The decision not to go just with an out and out right winger, and it was almost like Job and Pritchard were played as two tens and that occupied that area, and everything went down there. All this talk about Jack Clarke, but he was ignored for most of the first half, including in the end to their detriment by the opposition because they decided they didn't need to mark him for a few seconds and got punished.
It worked. I think it worked a lot better. I think it, I know Roberts will hold his position, and he'll rarely, he'll rarely come inside for the ball. But with Job and Pritchard, they were both kind of holding different positions and being very dynamic with it. It was good to see. Obviously, Clark is going to predominantly stay on the left, and I think when you've got Roberts, that will stick on the right as well. You usually kind of lose the middleman a little bit. If that's Job or Pritchard, you kind of have this big gaping hole in what should be the number 10 position. But it worked pretty well. Admittedly, against a Preston side that weren't great at the back, it was still good to see that players taking up decent attacking positions.
And Alex Pritchard, special mention, Gareth, I think.
Yeah, he was class, wasn't he? He's played two very different roles in his starts in recent weeks against Leeds and on Monday. But his influence in both games, were massive. I mean, the strike for the goals, like he's hit that so cleanly, hasn't he? He's like it just flew as soon as it left his foot, it was in. But yeah, it's just funny that we decided that we wanted to sell him in the summer, and you can see how vitally important he is to the team. So hopefully we don't have any discussion about him departing this month, because you can see how important he is for a variety of reasons.
They surely can't do that. After the fiasco they've had in the last few weeks, and they've got an opportunity on Saturday to get everyone like massively on side. And if they went and did things like that this month, we'd be like, "Are you doing this on purpose now?" Just sell Cork for 4 million quid or something as well for a laugh.
Yeah, looking forward to all
For
this
Newcastle.
speculation over January. It's going to be great, isn't it? Because I feel like it's a continuation. I don't know if you remember, like on transfer deadline day in the summer, when suddenly like we were like, please sign some players, and then it was just like about six of our players got linked with Premier League clubs, didn't it? And it was like, God, they're just going to lose our whole team here. And I feel like it's just going to continue on and be more spread out. They've always started with Dan Neil, haven't they?
Yeah,
So,
I think
yeah.
concerning that, to be honest. But
Well, especially when we've only got one midfielder aside from Dan Neil. I mean,
Yeah.
Jamie Tett is coming back, but I think, do you know what I would say about him is he's probably at least, I'll keep on thinking, well,
when he comes in, at least we've got somebody to bring on in the last 10 minutes if you want to like show something up
Yeah.
in that area, because we haven't got anyone to do that at the moment. I mean, we've had to bring on Aushish and Pritchard in that sort of area before, so you know, if we're not going to sign anybody in that position, seems we're just going to sign more, well, try and sign wingers. That's our favorite thing. Well, you know, that would be positive, but yeah, I don't really want to lose anybody in January, but you never know, do you? It just feels like a little bit, some of the comments, you know, even from Moorby previously and then from Beale on Neil, it's a bit like shining a light, isn't it? Rather than
But
kind of.
to be fair, he tried to do Marbury tried to do that Roberts for the whole
Yeah,
time
he
he was
did.
here, didn't
Yeah,
he?
he did. Yeah.
I think in January though, like a manager can't really win sometimes when they're asked. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's difficult because like you basically he's not going to say Daniel's crap, is he? So like, it's because like, do you think he's good enough to play in the Premier League? No, I think he's awful. Like, he's not gonna kind of come out and
I
play
thought
that.
Michael Beale, again, jumping ahead a bit of the Newcastle game, but I thought he did quite well in the press conference today as well. I feel
Oh.
like they were trying to, they were like chipping away at him to try and say something. They've got the advantage because of the recent Derby record and stuff like that. Do you feel like you've got a bit of a hoodoo over them almost? And he just didn't get dragged into that at all. He was just
Suppose
like,
he's
no,
got a selling
not at all.
edge, like experience, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's true. That's
Yeah,
true.
we
Oh,
haven't
well.
talked about the fact that a striker scored a goal.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Nice
Strikers goal as
goal,
well.
though.
Like
It
it
was, yeah.
really, really did really well to get across that defender and steer it in. And Roberts and Clark have done that hundreds of times this season. Put the ball in the box, and there's been nobody who's got the natural ability to just sniff out where it's going to land. And Roosen did it. And to be fair, we were all praiseful when Roosen played in the home game. When he can't remember it was against now, but he played quite well, and then suddenly just got dropped. So,
With the amount of
yeah.
like chances that we've had over the last, you know, few, well, I would say like an entire calendar year, where I kind of turned and said, yeah, if that had gone to Stewart, we'd have scored that. And Saturday was, well, not Saturday, Monday was the first one that we've scored that was a proper striker's goal. And that Stewart, you would have expected Stewart to get on the end of that and score, but I think the expectations have dropped so much with the situation that just didn't expect Rusin to get on the end of it, then he did, and it's like transformative almost,
I think what you'd
like
say about,
revolutionary.
I think Rusin for me, like he does a lot of the right things. Like you think about compared to the other strikers, how involved in the game he is. Like he does occupy defenders, he does, you know, turn them, run, being behind, he makes some good runs in the box. He's had opportunities in games which he should have scored, and hasn't. Whereas the others just haven't had any chances. I think I remember Meander had a shot in a game, and obviously Hamia does things,
And they
which,
won't be doing things much longer.
yes. But yeah, I was really, because I know it's like the cliche sort of thing. Well, if you come and you work hard, you'll get the fans on your side. And he works so hard, like Russell. He just works his backside off. He runs all game. To try and get something going, try and do something. And that's all you can do sometimes. At least you can run around. That's all. And I know it's a low bar, but at least he's doing it. And he's got his reward at the on Monday. And it was a really nice striker's goal, like you said, Stephen, where he's, you know, picking out time his run to perfection, and getting on the end of it.
Touched the ball once in their box, so perfect, really.
Yeah, that's all you can ask for, isn't
Good to see, good to see. Right, let's take a quick break and then we'll move on because I've got a big game to discuss.
Correct, that's out. 5 wickets for Stephen Harmison. Very well deserved, well bowled. Australia in big trouble. All out 190. Stephen Harmison, take a bow. 5 wickets. Sixth 5-wicket haul in Test match cricket. Bowled beautifully today. Best bowling figures versus Australia. He'll be very, very happy. England will be happy. Australia will be a little bit disappointed.
Welcome back to the Wise Man Say podcast. Right, I'm delighted to say that we are joined by cricketing legend and Talk Sports Newcastle correspondent. Is that fair? Is that your official title now, Steve Harmison?
It's one of them. Yeah, it is one of them. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's one of them. It's cricket correspondent, Newcastle correspondent. I'm off to India, so I do the Man City game, and then that's me gone for what could be 2 weeks, it could be 6 weeks, it could be 7 weeks. God knows what's happening with Talk Sport. But yeah, I think a man of many trades and useless at most of it.
That's a bit harsh. You were in India recently for the World Cup, weren't you? And they really, you was just telling me they really respect your privacy over there and stuff, don't they?
Oh yeah, brilliant. Yeah, it's a wonderful place, as India. It is full to the brim of people who don't like standing behind anybody else. It seems to be an insult when you're on the road to be behind somebody. Everybody seems as though they've got a new horn for Christmas from a car point of view, but it's a great place. And England are going for 5 test matches, which is going to be tough. The World Cup was tough. And they're not going to the big cities either, which makes it even more of a challenge because when you're in the big cities, it's fine. But when you go to the likes of where England are going, which is Riyadh Cup, you know, Ranchi and Vishakhapatnam, it is people might say that about the northeast of England. It's not quite London.
Right. Well, not to exclude you from anything, because what I asked the lads to do was just pick their favourite derby experience. So it's only fair we let you do that one as well. Well, if you can remember that far back, Steve. right, we're going to go around. Right, Matt, come on, you give me yours.
Mine has to be the 1-0. Just before Christmas at St James, I think. Obviously, we won't go into the goal scorer, but I think winning the derby
just ruined that for a lot of us.
Obviously, that was there, and like just before Christmas, winning in the last minute. I always think that's like, as a kid, you're like, I imagine if we, because you've seen other, you know, it's happened in other derbies before, and I'd never seen it happen at either, like for either side for us. And it was like, imagine if we did that, and then we did, and it was amazing, to be fair. I think that was, I know that we've had others, but I don't know, that one's always the one at Christmas time, and it was pretty, it was pretty special. It's slightly, you know, ruined, I guess. But the moment itself, you're never gonna take away.
Me and Gareth were in the press box for that, and we just couldn't, obviously, being in the Newcastle press box, you can't celebrate. I think it was just like a look was exchanged.
There was two Newcastle fans sitting next to me in the press box. Literally, that's two Newcastle fans with one of them had a bag from the club shop. Like, it was just bizarre. Like, they just put them there next to me. I don't know if they were doing it, and they were going on about Adam Armstrong. I don't know what was going on. If he scores today, he'll be a West End legend. That's what he's saying. He didn't. So
he just spread it.
Now he plays for Southampton. Anyway.
Okay, well, you're talking, Gareth, so give us yours. That must have been some experience for you if you were sitting there as well.
Well, yeah, that would have been, might have been mine because of that, and watching the celebrations after and watching the players run over to the away end. And yeah, I think probably, even though it was away from home and obviously seeing us beat Newcastle at the stadium, it would probably have to be the 3-0 under De Canio, I think, because it was, given the importance of the game, like, you know, we were obviously battling relegation, and we just, I don't know where it came from, and the quality of the goals was ridiculous, really. So
because it was a gulf in quality that year.
Yeah, I mean,
they played
in Europe in the week, and I think that was one of Pardew's, I think initially he said it wouldn't be a problem, and at the end it was a problem, so, you know.
Yeah, I was going to ask Richard, but he's disappeared. So
you'll have to ask Steve.
Yeah, come on then, Steve. Give us the black and white view.
I think mine would have to be obviously Alan's last game.
We predicted you were going to say this. Go on then, Alan.
I was training at Newcastle at the time. I'd just seen off, I think, my third manager. I think we'd seen off, obviously, Sir Bobby went, Graham went, and then obviously Glenn was in, and there was a couple of caretakers in between. So because I was training in there, because during my cricketing career, I was fortunate that 6 months contracts were in cricket, not 12 months like they are now. and I didn't have anywhere else to train. And so Bobby kindly let me use Newcastle. So I was connected to the club as well as, I knew quite a few of the players as well through from a social side. So from that point of view, it made it a little bit more special when you've seen, and then obviously the euphoria of Alan's last game and everything went with it. But I was also at the 2-1 game when at St James's, when there was no roof on the Leasers end, and me, Tommy Wright was in goal for us. Who was it? Who scored? Philip scored. Quinn scored, didn't he?
Yeah, Quinn
scored the first one.
That would have been my favorite. That would have been yeah. That's my favorite one. So that yeah. Quinn scored the first, and then Phillips scored that's that right, one yeah. Where he put the ball over right after the rebound, didn't
we
he?
We were playing Middlesex in a 4-day championship game, which obviously got washed out and abandoned. And David Boone was Durham's captain, and he said to me and Paul Collingwood, "Under no circumstances are you allowed to go to that game." And as you can imagine, that went on deaf ears because me and Collie were never going to miss it. Unfortunately thing for Collie, not like what's going to happen in this game, you get bust in and bust out. Collie went to the game and he's in his Durham CCC sponsored car, which had Paul Collingwood written all over the side of it. So he got chased down Barrack Road, him and a couple of his mates. I think one of them got caught and got a little bit of a kicking, but fortunately he was all right at the end of it. But Collie being nifty, he got away. So I was at that game. I reckon that night I could have jumped into the swimming pool fully clothed and come out drier compared to what it was that night. It was absolutely monsoonic. But in the middle of the afternoon, at lunchtime, we got a message through John Morris, who played for Durham at the time. He came into the Durham dressing room and said, "You'll not believe Alan and Duncan Ferguson aren't going to play." And we're like, "Don't be stupid. No way. Not even Hollett would do that." And obviously he did. So, we didn't believe Johnny until the teams were written out and stone-faced Ferguson and Shearer were sitting behind and Sunderland won. But I think my favourite memory has to be the one where Alan finished because, you talk about Scholler and you talk about Kevin Nolan being brilliant for Newcastle against Sunderland. But I think, from a Geordie hero to finish his days at the Stadium of Light, his last ever kick was a goal against Sunderland. I think from a Newcastle fan, I'm sure that's what dreams are made of.
Yeah, we had a feeling you were gonna go for that one.
it was a soft penalty, that really, wasn't it? I think it was Danny Collins actually might have given the penalty away.
It was, yeah. Newcastle just tweeted something about it in some of the commentary. I think the commentary might have been from somebody that played for Sunderland. I can't remember what it was, but he was ever so complimentary towards the Sunderland defenders. Because they were awful. As much as I'm a Newcastle fan, yeah, you watch the goals. There was one, the Albert Luque goal was hilarious. Two defenders knocked each other out as he went straight through it. The goal that he got, and Chopra just came on, run straight onto the pitch, and nobody seemed to pick him up from.
He kicked the ball out of the goalkeeper's hand, Steve.
But it's still classed as a goal. So yeah, but it was good defending from someone.
Yeah, well, to be fair, for balance, we did finish on 15 points that season, so that was...
Do you know what the worst thing about it is? that Chopra goal is that Kelvin Davis actually caught the ball.
The one time he did it.
He didn't get away.
That was a surprise that he caught it and he let go of it straight away.
All that confidence he'd gained from the Easter, the Good Friday at Man United.
God, yeah.
He got caught the ball in that instance and was punished. We won't talk about that any longer.
Rick, we lost you there. Did you have a game to bring
yeah,
up?
Yeah, I think my favourite's the 2008 2-1 at home, just because it had been so long in coming with the Richardson free kick. My tickets were in the north stand, right in the middle of the north stand, so it was kind of straight down our throat. And I said to my mate, it was like, he's never going to get it up and over from there. Yeah, so he's going to lay it off to Juve. He's going to lay it off to Juve. And I got midway through saying Juve, and it's in the back of the net.
Yeah.
So
I was behind that.
But
yeah,
it was just the scenes. I don't think they were called limbs in those days. I think. But they were. It was pretty special, especially going out in the town afterwards as well. It was a real, real special moment.
Well, before we move on, Steve, I just want to come back to something you mentioned there. So you used to train with Newcastle, I guess, in the winter months and stuff when it was out of the cricket season. So what was the extent of that? Did they let you join in and play with them and stuff? Or was it just physical stuff? Oh, that would have been amazing, though, wouldn't it?
It was brilliant. It was brilliant as a Newcastle fan. There was two. I had two rules on that, on my own rules on that. One, I never wore the kit. I never wore Newcastle kit because I believed you had to earn the right to wear the kit. So I had my own sort of England kit, or you know, I was my cricket kit, Durham kit, or whatever. In two, I never went outside. Cricket's a summer sport, so it was all more often than not, I was training in the winter, so there was no way I was going outside. But joking aside, no, I was no way I was putting myself in a position to be in, you know, a contact sport with Bambi on ice legs like mine, anywhere near multi-million pound footballers. So that was that. Anything physical outside, I joined in. Anything, you know, I was mainly in the gym, and it was Sir Bobby Robson. I came back from Bangladesh after I got man of the match in the first test match, didn't play in the second test match, didn't go to Sri Lanka, and one of the London journalists wrote a horrendous article about me not wanting to travel and not wanting to play for England. And so Bobby had read it, and fortunately for me, Durham's former sports scientist, the guy who looked after Durham and put my body back together a few times after injury, he was working for Newcastle at the time. And he had spoke to Sir Bobby, and Sir Bobby had offered if he wants to get fit and he wants to be serious, come in here and train in here. And it was an amazing 6 years. You know, I've seen a few managers off, and you know, even when Sir Bobby went, Graeme Souness came, and first thing he said to me was, the senior players have said that you're good as gold in here. You're more than welcome to carry on if that's what you want to do. And then obviously Glenn after that, and I left when Sam came. More because my career was finishing with England. So, but it was great. I learned what it was like to be a sportsman. I learned what it was like to be a professional. So Bobby dragged me into the gym first up, pointed at Gary Speed, Shea Given, Alan Shearer, you know, Steve Harper, and said, look, they'll show you what it's like to play international elite sport. He did point in the other corner where Jermaine Janus, Kieran Dyer, Craig Bellamy, Titus Bramble, and one or two others. He said, if you go anywhere near them, he says, you're out. He said, I can't get rid of them, but I can get rid of you. So he was brilliant. He was brilliant. And he made me, I had to eat at the times that they were eating. I trained when they trained, and he made me feel as though I was part of the group. And it really benefited me. He saved my career, Sir Bobby Robson. And when I had my benefit testimonial, you know, the proceeds went to the foundation because he helped me so many. He helped me so much. And it was brilliant just to be involved in, you know, Newcastle United as a fan as well.
Where would have you fancied yourself playing, Steve? You're a big lad. Centre half or target man up front? Which
I was a centre half. I could kick anything that moved close. Yeah, close as quick as what I could, but I couldn't catch many. I was a physical centre half who played it. Played in the Northern League, played Asherton for quite a while. And then obviously when it came, I had to leave and go and play, you know, cricket, because that was me job.
And what was the, you mentioned Paul Collingwood there, who, you know, anybody with a passing interest in cricket, no, certainly that sort of golden era in a way, because people think of the Ashes victories in the mid-noughties and stuff. And so people will know that Paul Collingwood's a Sunderland fan. Obviously, you're a Newcastle fan. I imagine you get quite a mix at Durham. And what was that like?
You do get quite a mix. Collie brainwashed a few. Young Borthwick, massive Sunderland fan. Obviously, me and Collie have hated each other for 25 years, mainly on derby weekends. There was a couple of times he brought a Sunderland shirt in for me. One, I tried to set fire and couldn't quite get it in time before he took it back off me. Net sessions leading into that week were very, very interesting, because Collie bowled at 65 mile an hour and I bowled at 95 mile an hour. So quite enjoyed bowling at him that week. But we had some yeah, good fun, good time. There was one instance we got asked to do the raffle at halftime during one of the derbies, and we got asked to wear our colours, and we both refused point blank to wear black and white or red and white. I was nowhere I was going to disrespect someone walking on a field at Stadium of Light with a Newcastle shirt on, you know, because I was a Durham player in the one sporting organisation that brought Newcastle and Sunderland fans together was Durham County Cricket Club, because you'd sit next, you'd feel it fine leg, and there they are on the radio listening to the games, watching the cricket, and there'll be one sitting with a Sunderland shirt on listening to Nick Barnes, and the other one sitting with a Newcastle shirt on listening to Razor or Mick Lowe's before that, and then, you know, on the Sunday or the Monday or the Tuesday, they'd sit side by side with their Durham shirts on, And it was probably the one organisation, Durham County Cricket Club, that brought Newcastle and Sunderland together.
And don't they sing Blading Races? Are the Sunderland lads having that?
They do sing the Blading Races, but I think a couple of the Sunderland lads who were brainwashed are from out of this area. I've got to pick Scott Borthwick up. How he's not caught on, that's the Blading Races, a Newcastle song, because he sings it with gusto and, you know, vigour. But Collie, I think Collie brought the Blading Races in. It was either Collie, Chris Bushworth, or Scott Borthwick. All three of them are massive Sunderland fans. So when I heard them singing that for the first time, I was like, "Look, you're not stupid or what?" But no, they love. It's not just sang; it's like plastered all over the walls as well. So, you know, it just brings that. There's a lot of Sunderland fans in the dressing room now, and you know, they sing a Newcastle song when they win. Bizarre, isn't it?
Durham song, historically, I think. Right, Steve, as you know, I've sat and watched Newcastle for a year and a half and watched them blow teams away, left, right and centre, and it was very much their way, kind of in that zone when this draw was made. What's happened since? What's happened in the last few games?
I think just injuries. I think injuries tells its, you know, has its toll. Not just on, I think from a professional sports point of view, I think it has from preparation as well. They're not training because they're playing games. And the one person who's not got the violin out, because if you look at someone like Antonio Conte or Jose Mourinho, when they were at teams at Tottenham and one or two other places, when things weren't going so well, yeah, they complain and moan about everything. So fair play to Eddie Howe. He hasn't moaned about, you know, the injuries up until probably the last week. And I think he's held them together as well as he possibly could have. He also, when you keep going and going and going and you're not training and you're not preparing, you know, you go potentially a little bit stale. Unfortunately, that's what probably has happened with Newcastle. The three big games they needed to pick up points in, obviously the Luton game was massive, the Nottingham Forest game was huge, with the Liverpool and then, you know, the City game sandwiched between the Sunderland game. That, for me, was always going to be the ones they needed to win. And that would have relieved the pressure going into this week. And this week, it's great. I think it's fantastic. It's something that, you know, Newcastle fans have been desperate for. I think both, I think if both sets of fans are really honest with each other, you know, when Newcastle win the Championship or Sunderland win the Premier League or vice versa, they missed each other. This is a game that everybody wants twice a season. And I think this is going to be a great week, but Newcastle desperately need to win. And if there is a good time to play Newcastle, from a Sunderland point of view, it probably is this weekend.
Well, here's an argument to say that this is all just one elaborate plan by Newcastle just to give Sunderland some hope. And that's entirely why this run of form's come about, because they want us to build our hopes up a little bit. Because, I mean, who just coming to the Sunderland lads, I mean, when you think about when this draw was made and we were talking about stylistically how this is bad for us, because this is the kind of team we struggle to play against at a Championship level, as if people allowed themselves to start to believe. Come on, tell me who's starting to convince yourself that we might be able to get something here now.
Well, I'm annoyed with myself, to be honest, because I have allowed that elements of that to create. When the draw was made, I was like, my first thought was, anybody but Newcastle, you know, because the Gulf at the time, in form, we weren't playing particularly well either. And the size of, like, the different universes we're operating in at the minute. And, like, as the weeks have gone on, I've watched a couple of Newcastle games and I've seen them play, obviously, Champions League games and then the ones over Christmas, and I've kind of allowed myself stupidly to think, actually, if we turn up here, I think we do have a chance. My head still says that we don't, because I was kind of... the scoreline I had in my head at the time was that we would lose 2-0. But I do have... there is a little bit of me that thinks, but maybe we might win, actually. I think that's getting a little bit bigger, but as it's getting closer, I'm kind of just erring, trying to usher that away, because it's not a nice time now, because it's, what, 3 days away? And it's like, that's pretty awful now, thinking about it.
You're starting to hit a little bit.
I'm very much in the window of optimism. As I was saying earlier, Like, it will happen. I feel, you know, I've seen quite a lot of Newcastle, you know, the Champions League games, the games that they've played on TV, and I think, ooh, you know, when you look at that side that's been stripped down to its bare bones, it's more on a level, you know, just not thinking about the fact of how much Joe Linton costs compared to our entire squad, as an example. So just ignoring that, I think there's weaknesses that can be exploited. And I'm probably in 48 hours not going to think like that at all. But at the moment, I'm allowing myself to think, you know, Jack Clark. I'm laughing even thinking it. Like, Jack Clark could probably exploit a little bit of space in front of him and you know, have a real go at those defenders and that kind of patched up back line. I think there's definite, you know, it's definitely more level than it was perhaps 2-3 weeks ago.
Probably worse, because I don't think his hope would have existed.
No. I think we do, like, we do have players that can cause them problems, definitely. Like, we do. We've seen that, like, this season, even against, like, I know Leicester are nowhere near a top-end Premier League side now, but we did cause them a lot of problems, and we've played well at times this season.
Leeds as well.
Yeah, and we've got some talented players, but it's the midfield that worries me. Just the sheer size of Joe Linton. If there was one player I was hoping to pick up a knock at, for all the quality you've got elsewhere, I think it was him, just because he could just totally dominate this game. Him, if we allow it, well, we don't even have to allow it; he could just do it. So he's the worry for me.
Well, there's a couple of things I want to ask Steve about. Some of those things we've mentioned both of those things already, so might as well start there. That's what I'm concerned about as well. Like, I think stylistically, which I acknowledge when this draw come out, watching Newcastle as much as I do, it wasn't good for Sunderland because of the way they play, big physical side in the middle of the park, and the hunting packs to find the right time to do it, and the counter really, really quickly, which is generally the teams we struggle against. I think from a Newcastle point of view, Steve, is there a concern that Joe Linton, Bruno Guimarães might get themselves too worked up for a game like this?
That is a valid point, because you've seen Joe Linton against Nottingham Forest. He's basically standing from half time, standing the sideline, staring down Eddie Howe as he was trying to warm up. And he's like a gladiator trying to get on the field to help his team. Now, that side of it comes from Eddie Howe. That side of it comes Jason Tindall, that's the management side. Joe Michael Beale has got the same conversations with one or two of the Sunderland players, that the emotions could overcome you and lose you the game. I think from a Newcastle and Sunderland's point of view, it's about the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes. Because I think what the big thing that you've got, a huge thing that you've got to factor in, is that in the last 18 months, Newcastle, every single game, have been playing in the atmosphere, which is going to be played at the stadium light on Saturday afternoon. It's going to be unbelievably raucous. It's going to be breathtakingly loud. It's going to be, the atmosphere is going to make what is the derby. Now, how many times have Sunderland players played in that atmosphere over the course of the last 18 months, 2 years? A handful of times? Yeah, Newcastle are Champions League. We are being to Dortmund, being to Milan. The atmosphere is not going to daunt the names you mentioned from a Newcastle point of view. So the first 10 minutes is huge for Sunderland. Can they withstand the pressure that Newcastle are going to hit them at? But then the emotion of the last 10 minutes and where you are as a team physically is demanding mentally, and that's when mistakes come. How many times have you seen Man City win with 5 minutes, 10 minutes to go? Man United used to do it for years. Liverpool do it now. And I think that, for me, is where Newcastle probably have the edge on the emotion side of it. And then it comes down to individual talent. And Newcastle can be exploited in their box. You know, last year, you would have said no chance. No chance, because they don't concede goals. With Isak, Gordon, Almiron, you're thinking there's quality there where Newcastle are going to create a hell of a lot of chances. It's up to them to finish them. Where last year, you would have said, Sunderland, no chance. Trippier, Botman, Shaw, Byrne, Pope. It is, that's just solid. So both boxes are huge. I'm talking in cliches, but I think from the game point of view, Sunderland are still 0-0 after 10 minutes. They can grow into the game. I think Newcastle will come hard, will come fast, especially you know, with the atmosphere building, and it'll go bang from the start.
It comes down
to the last 10 minutes and whether Sunderland are physically and mentally able to hang on if they are in the game still.
I had a feeling Newcastle were coming.
That's where Newcastle could exploit.
I had a feeling they were coming just let us have the ball for a bit. And then, because like I said, they're
still, no,
sometimes when they're hunting packs and then hit teams on the counter, I was thinking they're going to just try and weather the storm for the first five and then choose the moment to really get in behind us, because we do struggle against the counter-attack. And Newcastle are really good at that when it clicks.
I don't think 6,500 Geordies will let Newcastle sit back. I think they'll be at and at and at. So I think it'll be a great contest. I don't see it being, you know, Newcastle in the Premier League, Newcastle being the Champions League, Newcastle winning 5 or 6-0. I don't see that. The derby. How many times do you see a derby, you know, cancel each other out for large portions of the game? And if they do that, then I think it comes on the quality. And what you mentioned before, that Guimaraes quality, that Isak quality, and that Gordon quality especially, that might be the difference from a Premier League side.
I think the first 10 minutes there is massive. Like, if we do concede early, that's for us. Like, because the players then could... We saw it last season in a game against Stoke, where it was kind of... We're all desperate. Obviously, it wasn't, you know, nowhere near this sort of thing, but it was Alex Neil coming back, and we went 1-0, and we just fell up. The team fell apart, and it was like a... That sort of like, and we've seen, you know, Southampton have played Portsmouth with a similar gap in quality of teams in a derby, and they've just swatted them aside. And an early goal would kill it, I think. So I think it's the 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes is massive.
Sunderland need to score first, you feel?
Yeah, we do, 100%, to get anything out of the game.
And did you see that stat that was floating around earlier that said that Sunderland are the only side in the top four divisions that have won every game they've had a lead in this season?
Mm.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm.
I'll clutch at anything. I'll clutch at any straw that's gone. I just saw that stat earlier on. I thought it was quite interesting.
I think the individual battles, I think, are going to be the thing that I'm looking forward to in the game. Like, the game, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, some of the better players that we have test themselves against, you know, a better quality opposition. So, you know, seeing how Neil does, seeing how Clark does, Ekwer, you know, Patterson, players like that, it's a test for them. And if those individuals have good games, I think the confidence will grow and it'll be a closer encounter. I think if you played the game 10 times, I think Sunderland will probably win once or twice. So we just got to hope that on Saturday we get the anomaly first. It's not being negative. It's just that, you know, the fact of the matter is that, like, you know, you've highlighted, Matt, there's a gulf in standard. So that's just the way it is. It's probably the, you know, biggest gap there's ever been between the two teams in history.
Certainly the biggest of the generation.
I think the only time in competition, like, had Sunderland drawn Newcastle in the cup, when Keegan was managing, they were finishing second, and Sunderland had Mick Buxton as manager, and they were fighting a steal. That might have been a bigger gap.
No, I just mean in terms of an actual contest.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
You know,
there's only 15, 16 places between each other and the pyramid. If you look at it in the grand scheme of things, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but you get... Sunderland could have been one of them teams that got promoted last year under Mowbray. You're sixth in the championship at the minute. And they're all saying there's a massive gulf between Newcastle and Sunderland. Go and do what Newcastle did the back end of last season and not concede goals. There's no reason why this could be a league game next year. And I'm listening to four people say doom and gloom, and so it's the biggest gulf that there has been in in a generation. I know we haven't played each other for 9 years, but that actually tells its own story. That's what tells you what the Premier League is, and that tells you what the Premier League money brings. And like I said right at the very start, and I know a lot of Newcastle and Sunderland fans love to hate each other, but boy, would they love a two games every single season. It would be unbelievable every single season if Newcastle played Sunderland.
I want to ask you about Newcastle's defence as well, Steve, because that's the other thing. They've got a lot of players coming back. As you said, they've had the injury problems. I'm thinking like Sven Botman in particular, who's such a good player. But does there have to be, despite how, you know, being derby game, does there have to be an element of responsibility from Eddie Howe in that? Is this a game for him? It's a cup game. Do you think you might maybe look to Lascelles instead?
No, I think you play Botman. Sven Botman is one of the, I think he's one of the better defenders in the Premier League. He just hasn't, last year he was unbelievable. This year he's come back from an injury. And actually, I think some of his movements, he looks as though he possibly still is that.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Does he not think?
Injured than he is fit. I think protection in front of him doesn't help. I don't think Ramirez has had the help because Joe Linton missed a couple of games. He's been off the ball a little bit from a mobility point of view. Sean Longstaff played on the left and not played on the right where Miley was, and that gives him a little bit more protection. At the end of the day, Newcastle just haven't defended very well, whether it be Pope not behind them. But I can probably say that Newcastle's back four on Saturday will be Trippier, Shaw, Lascelles, and probably Livramento, because I would imagine you go with Pearce either side with a view that, if I was Eddie Howe, I'd be attacking Sunderland. I'd be looking to go and win the game.
Is Trippier not injured?
Well, they're saying he might be fit for Saturday. They're saying he might be fit for Saturday. And I think he is fit. Even if he's 90% fit, even though he's given a couple of goals away, he plays for me. Even a 90% fit Trippier on that field sets a standard to them players like you'd not believe. You know, he came on a sub again, Tranmere in the Carabao Cup. Half time, we'll get beat 1-0. He just lifts the standard. And I know he's made some mistakes, but you know, for me, he's a better player when he's in the team. And Newcastle are a better player when Trippier plays.
It's Jack Clark coming up against Jack Clark. That'd be interesting battle. That.
Either battle is good. Clark or Trippier against Livramento was probably the battle of the game, because that's probably Sunderland's biggest way of creating chances and outs when you're hitting Newcastle on the break. So either one, it's going to be a great battle, whether it's Trippier's experience getting tighter and not letting Clark get at him, or Livramento probably go the other way and say, right, try and run at me because there's no way you're going to beat me for pace.
So you don't think he played Dan Burn, no? Would the Geordie element not help?
I think if Kieran Trippier's fit, he plays. And I think the pace of Livramento on the other side might just be the contributing factor why you might go with Livramento after getting, pardon the pun, he got burnt last week when he played Burn. Probably not fully fit. Botman not fully fit. And he probably could have played Livramento with legs, and that might have got him out of the trouble he got into against Nottingham Forest when we got murdered on the break.
What about in the midfield? Who's he playing? Joe Linton and Bruno are going to play out now.
I think so.
Longstaff and Miley, he's got a decision now then, I guess.
I think you play Longstaff. I think you play a Longstaff's energy and play a Longstaff along with Almiron, Isaac and Gordon.
Okay.
What about
can any of the Sunderland lads see any changes from Patrick Roberts is not fit, unfortunately. I would have loved to have seen Roberts come up against Dan Burn in particular, but like Steve said, I think it was quite publicly highlighted how Forrest targeted him, and I don't know, he'll be begging to play, won't he? The fact he's a Newcastle fan and stuff. But I would have loved to have seen Roberts games, but Roberts not going to play. So
I think if Roberts was fit, he might have gone to that with Pritchard through the middle. I don't think he can play Barr. I don't think he can start him in this game. So I think it'll probably be as you were on Saturday, really.
I don't mind that, you know.
Yeah.
Roberts is obviously not fair. It's just pretty gutting, to be fair. Maybe you can have him on the bench. I don't know. I don't know how. Like he hasn't ruled him out, has he? So we don't know. But I don't mind the team we had out on Monday. It was imbalanced actually, but it kind of helped.
At least he had a good game, didn't he?
Yeah,
he
did.
That was positive.
Yeah, and obviously planned. You would think that was planned, taking him off. So
yeah,
I don't see any changes. I think that
a much needed improved performance by Ekwa as well, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, he was very good. Yeah.
He's gonna have to be on it because he's the physical. Like he's big. Like he's, you know, he is the big player in the middle. So if physically he's the one that is the closest to Joe Linton, really. So
he's the stopper, isn't he? That's what we need in the middle.
Yeah, and Pritchard obviously has the experience, not of this game, but of probably played in the biggest games of anyone in the team, to be fair. So he's played the Premier League at least. So, I don't see him making any changes unless we pick up any injuries in the next couple of days, or unless Roberts makes a miraculous. Can we get Yuri Geller in or something?
unless Dummett plays for Newcastle, there's not one player in either squad that's been involved in this fixture before.
Marcel's not played before, no?
No, Dubravka came just after, I think.
The Cells played in that Nebraska reserve game, didn't he? The 6-0. Was it when Watmore scored a hat trick?
We're not counting that.
I'm saying, but the Cells played in that game.
Straws coming to clutch as career.
I think like that might play a part, because you know there's players on both sides that haven't experienced, and you've seen it before. And there's players that have had great seasons and just completely wilted under the lights of a Northeast derby. So I'm clutching onto those kind of straws. Like, there might be a few rabbits in headlights, but I mean, that's going to be on both sides as well. I think they're very quickly going to find out what it's like. You know, it's going to be the first second of the game. They're going to hear that raucous noise, and it's like it. And it's my daughter's first derby, and I've tried to explain to her. There is no explaining the noise that she'll hear of just constant. It's like kind of like constant hatred on both
sides.
Shall we
sides, go around? So, shall we quickly before we finish go around our first derbies? Because that reminds me of my dad telling me that at Roker Park, and he was trying to explain the derby game to me. And this would have been when we were relegated. I was only like 9 or 10. I'd been relegated in 91, so it would have been Division 2, 91-92 season perhaps at Roker Park. 1-1. They always seem to be 1-1 in those days, and I can remember that was something else. That was my first one.
I was there when Marco did win in playoff final. I was in the corner. I was at the School of Excellence, so we were in the paddocks in the bottom underneath. But we were actually underneath the pitch because you peered up over the top, didn't you? I was there when Marco did us in the rain.
You didn't run on the pitch and try and get the game
called. My first derby. I don't think I went to one before. I can't remember one before that. I keep taking a mick out of Ando because one of my first games was when Ando scored one of his only goals for Newcastle against Millwall, I think it was. But I think it was around about that time, late 80s. But I think my first derby was the Gabby Deanan one.
Mine was 99 and the Stadium of Light.
2-2.
2-2.
That was mine as well, yeah.
My first one was when Dabby's last scored. It was quite late. So it was that 2003?
2003? Yeah, it would have been. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bobby was manager. Yeah. I remember just walking out and the Newcastle fans were coming out and the coaches at the time, and I was walking on the north side of the river, and they're all holding up like Nationwide or Coca-Cola or whatever. Whoever the sponsor was, they were holding up because we were going to get relegated.
Nice. Who? What do we think about Newcastle's ticket allocation?
Oh, Steve, we've had
our rants about this. Have you that hand grenade in?
No, we've done a whole podcast on this already.
Open the can of worms.
Yeah. I'm not going, Steve. I'm not going. I've refused to go.
Refused to go?
No, I'm not going.
I couldn't believe when I seen that. 6,000.
I don't have a problem with a number, to be fair. Like, because we would have wanted the same allocation, so I don't have an issue with the number. It's the fact that it's the moving of the fans that is the end. The end of the day, that's the thing that sticks. But the number itself, we would have been asking for the same. So
mm-hmm. And you'd have been in the gods as well. So you wouldn't have been moving Newcastle fans. You would have been up. You still would have been in the same place.
Yeah, but it's just like it's
yeah. They're not in a replay. They're not giving Sunderland the lasers in. They're pitch side anyway. Do you know
also,
what I mean?
Yeah. Well, so what time Newcastle fans have to get the bus on?
It's
half 8:30 in the morning, right? So what's going to happen if it's a replay? Kicks off at 7:45.
Won't be.
You get 6,000 Sunderland fans from Sunderland. to Newcastle in a bubble during rush hour on a weeknight. Good luck. There's no chance. Like, it's not going to happen. Like, the reciprocal thing, there's no chance you're going to get Sunderland fans
well,
on the buses.
Well, that game, Newcastle. Steve like, mentioned I mean, in a way, earlier,
it would be good to get it. It would be good to get a draw to just see what the
but that one we mentioned earlier though, in the rain on the mid that was midweek and we had to get bubble buses for that. I remember that was, I was on the bus
about 1,000 people there though.
We didn't even get that. We got about 600
exactly.
tickets.
But my point is, when you got 6,000, how are you going to get 6,000? Yeah. You're gonna have to take a day off work if you're going to the match.
The one in the rain. The one in the rain. I think it was only about 26 or 27,000 in the stadium because the roof had that they hadn't put the roof on that side. We were in. I had a season ticket in that end, and we were in the rain. And the Sunderland fans were in the corner of the Leeds stand end, and because they were in the rain as well. And I remember Collie, he couldn't because obviously we were playing cricket. Collie couldn't get to the stadium alight to get the bus. So he had to get. He drove stupidly, and he's like I said before, in his car, which had Paul Collingwood written all over the side of it. Everybody knew who Paul Collingwood was, and everybody knew he was a Newcastle Sunderland supporter. So,
that's a great decision. Yeah.
I just love the idea of him coming back to his car and like, oh dear. I went out in the Quayside once. So I went to a gig in the Quayside and I drove my car and I had a Metro radio sticker with the Sunderland colours on the back. And it was just absolutely covered. So someone must have had bronchitis or something, but it was absolutely covered. So it was like fair play. Like I would have done the same.
Maybe Paul Collin would have had to do like an Alan Partridge and get somebody to like do a quick fix on his car.
And taking it back to Bristol Street Motors the next morning.
She says, "Come past Collingwood."
Wow. No, I think like the allocation. I think now we're in the kind of now we've accepted it, and obviously it's
I'll never accept
about
it.
Now.
But I've moved on from it. I would say,
yeah. it's gonna make it a different kettle of fish to what we've experienced in a derby before, you know, when the Newcastle fans have been in the South Stand, you know, and there was that season when me and you, Gareth, we were in the South, the Southeast corner. It, you know, when you can hear them and you can hear them when they're in the North Stand upper, but it's a different kettle of fish when they're kind of in the same concourse as you.
Remember the whole jangling keys thing and all, remember that? Was that in that 4-1? I think that might have been Shearer's last game.
Shearer's last game. Coming back to what I said before, first 10 minutes, last 10 minutes, because the actual environment that this game is going to create, which is going to be amazing. It's going to be unbelievable for 48,000 people that's going to be inside the stadium. But Newcastle players have been playing in these games, because there's no game like Newcastle's on it. But the atmosphere and the noise element, Newcastle have been consistently playing in this. And that might, well, from a Newcastle fan point of view, you hope that it affects the Sunderland players for the initial part of the game.
I hope somebody's thought about the tunnel situation when we run out as well. Somebody, if you're listening, somebody at the club, think about it.
Yeah.
We can't be coming running out of the North Stand.
Yeah, because the changing rooms are on there.
You're going to have to switch them round in the tunnel. So. Yeah.
He's going to be crossing over each other and tripping over.
Oh, well, they'll have to.
That would be a first ever, wouldn't it? Like the two sets of players running out to opposition ends.
Yeah. They'll have to.
Yeah.
If nobody's thought of that, then... honestly.
Like Richard mentioned, I don't think there's any player in the game. Even in the coaching staff. Look at Newcastle's coaching staff. There's nobody in there that actually has been involved in a Newcastle Sunderland derby. Graham Jones is a Geordie, but he's never played in either of the game. I don't think there's anybody in the Sunderland coaching staff. None of the goalkeepers.
Possibly.
Michael Proctor would have played. Yeah.
I mean, Stevie,
not
I mean,
many
you.
People have been involved in that game.
You might be able to answer just from a sports psychology perspective and extrinsic motivators, all that kind of thing. I know I'm sort of talking about in some part, people might think, oh, well. It doesn't matter that much, but you've obviously run out walked out at you know, MCG Boxing Day, stuff like that, 90,000 Australians baying for blood, all that kind of thing. How much of a factor could it be if, say, somebody hasn't thought of something as simple as that and Sunderland run out at the start of the game into a massive end, the home end of Sunderland to full of Newcastle fans in the first derby for years.
It'd be massive. That could be the start of what I was on about for the first 10 minutes of the game. You know, you're trying to do a 15-minute, 20-minute warm-up in an end where everything feels at home apart from the people are closest to you. So I remember you mentioned, I remember 2002 Boxing Day, 96,000 in Melbourne. And Nasser Hussain thought it was a great idea to run up and do calf stretches in front of Beer 13, which is like the most historical, venomous crowd in world cricket. We're standing pushing boundary boards, and somebody shouted to Nasser, "Oi, Nasser, Saddam's more popular in your country than you are at the minute," because obviously Australia were 3-0 up. And it was like, right, come on, we're off. And we just start running it the other opposite way. So, yeah, you can go and fight it if you want. Sunderland fans, I would imagine Ali Catamol would pull his shorts up, drag his team to the Newcastle end and say, come on, give us your best. But if you're not prepared for what you're going to hear, look, it's going to be a great. I think it's going to be a great occasion. I think the game will be closer than what people think it's going to be.
Just before we go, Steve, give us your best and worst ever atmospheres for playing cricket for England. I'm guessing Australia were involved in both.
But Australia, yeah, the atmosphere at Lords, first year, first test against Australia in 05 was just, like I said, it's mind-boggling. Because you go through,
you took 5 wickets.
Yeah, but you go through, yeah, it's the one, yeah. It's one of the only places in world sport. You have to move supporters out of the way to get on the pitch. You go through the long room. If you ever, you know, anything about Lords, you've actually got to move them out of the way, the members out of the way. Excuse me, pardon me, I've got to go out and play cricket, sort of thing. But this was different. They were cordoned off, and you know, the egg and bacon tie lot, the posh lot at Lords. I've never heard noise like it. I've never heard, like, posh people cheering. It's just like a different noise. It really is. So trying to get your head around that and then go on the field. That was probably the best atmosphere. Probably the most hostile was in Pakistan, in Karachi, when Shahid Afridi was coming back from his ban, when they thought they were hard done by because we got him banned. We didn't. He was just moonwalking all over the pitch and everybody's seen it. He got banned, but he got brought back. His first game back was in his hometown of Karachi, and there was 60-odd thousand people. And I mean, it was terrifying. They did not like England at all. And they made their feelings pretty clear who their favourite son was. And that was probably the most hostile I've felt on a cricket pitch, and that was in Karachi. And that was about December 05, I think it was. So... great times, great moments, and I'm sure Newcastle fans, Sunderland fans, and more importantly, the players, over the course of the next sort of 3 or 4 days, are going to go through a wide range of emotions. And I just hope at the end of it that we all come to the same conclusion that we'd love this to happen twice a season.
But if you look at that, I mean, talk about the atmosphere, and obviously, you mean you were quick then anyway, Steve, but obviously you were pumped to the point where I remember I was out in the morning and I thought it started at 11, but it started at 10:30, didn't it? Mm. I got back in, not realising, I was like, oh, they've started, and it was about 10:50, but I think there's only been about half an overball, and I think it's because you hit Langer, didn't you, on the elbow.
Langer, Ponton,
and then you hit. Then you hit Ponton in the in the grill, and he cut his face, and that was like, you know, surely there's something behind that in the atmosphere, you know, getting you pumped up to the point where you could do that damage.
We were like gladiators going into the battle, and I think that if it's controlled, it's brilliant. If it's uncontrolled, it's catastrophic. Mm. And that is down to Michael Beale and Eddie Howe. Mm. Half an hour, 15 minutes. 10 minutes before the go out. If they can get them under control, then you know that could make or break first 10 minutes again.
Need a strong referee.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Get Beefcake. You think do it then?
You'd think like Michael Beale would have the edge in terms of having managed an Old Firm derby, and Eddie Howe has probably managed a South Coast derby or something against. I don't know.
I think the karma character I think the calmer character would be Eddie Howe. I can't see Eddie Howe losing his emotion. I've seen Michael Beale quite a few times lose his shit. And, I'm just thinking, is he ready for that? Because he came out of the coaching world into the number one job. I get what you're saying about the Rangers and Celtic, and that's the biggest, probably the biggest for me. But I think from an emotional person point of view, I think the one that Steve, you've seen Eddie Howe after defeats and after wins when he comes into the press room. And there's a calm, very, very calm, very, very controlled character. And I think that could be the difference leading into the game.
When I said Michael Beale has the edge, I mean, I'm clutching. I'm just clutching at anything right now. So allow me to indulge myself in that. I don't mean he's the better manager.
People are going
you're not going to see Eddie Howe go mental on the touchline. It's not his style at all.
No. In the next three days, we're all going to say some incredibly stupid things.
I've said them all tonight. So
and then worry. You know that's what we've got to remember, and that's what it does, isn't it? We're all gonna you know wake up, and someone's going to have a dream where we win 4-0 and they've scored the fourth goal, that sort of thing. There's all going to be that. And there's going to be the dream where the ball keeps running away from you, can't get on the end of it, and you get beat. And then there'll be all the other things in between. So it's one of them, in it, where you just on the deal, just want to get the game on, get it kicked off. That's what I was thinking. Derby's like, I hated the build up, absolutely hated it, made us feel sick. You want the game kicked off, and once it's on, that's it. It's you can't do anything about it anymore. So. Not that he can do anything anyway, but I don't know. He's feeling more in control of the ball than play. Maybe because it's closer to the end. I don't know, but I mean, I know Steve's saying, and I kind of agree with the point where he's saying it'd be great if we had the game every twice a year. But I just hate them. They're great when you win. Thankfully, as Stephen mentioned before, start recording the last sort of 10, 11 years we've been doing the podcast. We are undefeated. In the derby, so the last time we lost was 2011 August under Steve Bruce. So
coalition government,
yeah. So yeah,
Vince Cable was a business secretary. Sorry, I'm digressing.
Yeah,
but anyway. Right. Do we want to go out with predictions or not? Because I kind of feel like I don't want to be negative. I don't want to people accuse us of being negative here. I'm interested in Steve's prediction.
I think Newcastle will win 3-1. I think Newcastle will win 3-1. I just think that quality at the end of the game will be the ones that shows. Might be a stalemate for a while and then comes alive. I think Newcastle will finish stronger, and a bit like what Liverpool did to Newcastle the other day. And I think Newcastle will win 3-1.
But Newcastle, Liverpool did Newcastle the day. I don't think they finished strongly. I think they just began strongly.
All the way through. Yeah. It could have been for Dubravka. It could have been 10. But yeah, I think the Premier League intensity from a mental and physical point of view will probably show out in the last 10, 15 minutes because of the enormity of the derby and the emotion that's going to go in for the 48 hours before and then during the 90 minutes of the game.
I think I'll just say that I think if Sunderland score first, I think they've got a chance.
No, you need to give
a... No, you need to predict. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, do I? You, 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 you... Oh, then, Matt, come on then. You're telling me I've got to predict. What's your prediction?
I'm not going to predict us to lose. I think we'll win 2-1.
Okay.
There you go.
I think we're going to win at the moment. We're going to win 2-1. And I think the zero chance of 22 players being on the pitch at the end of the pick.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well.
It won't have VAR, will it?
No, the replay would, though, I think.
Yeah, the replay would because it's in Germany.
It's mad that. It doesn't make any sense to me. Right. You just not have it. Like,
we've got goal line. We'll have goal line decision. Like, so if it goes over the line, but we don't have it if it goes out of play. I mean, not that it's ever affected Newcastle, but if the ball goes out of play, there's going to be no VAR to help. But yeah, it's but it will apply in the replay if there is a replay, won't it?
If we had VAR in that the Canio 3-0, then it would have been 1-0, wouldn't it, for that CC header? Yeah. So you know, Yeah. Should not have that.
And Vaughan's goal would have been offside, yeah.
Yeah, it would have been as well. Yeah, never mind, eh? I'm going to say, I can only say 1-1. I'm going to have to say 1-1.
We'll draw as well.
And we'll probably lose the replay, but, you know.
The replay nice won, yeah.
I think we'd lose the replay quite.
The replay is terrifying as well, to be fair, because of how good Newcastle are at home, I know.
Yeah.
But I've got a feeling. You asked me this 2 weeks ago. I thought there was no chance we'd get anything, but I'm kind of thinking if we score first, I've just got a feeling it might be a draw.
Well, there's no point thinking we're going to get walloped.
It won't be a surprise if we lose the game.
You're at home though. You're all at home. Newcastle only won one game away from home.
Yeah, we're giving half the ground.
Very good, Sheffield.
Yeah.
You did score 8 in that game.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that's a good place to leave it. So thanks, Steve, for joining us. And this build up's going to be awful, like Gareth alluded to. So as always, thanks for listening.